Welcome to the Policy Committee today. It is now open. We don't have any apologies. No one's disappeared over lunch, and we have some leave of absences as noted before. We can confirm the agenda today. Any conflicts of interest? Oh, actually, I should have checked in the apologies regarding Councillor Laws. And whether what his status is in this meeting. Is he on the phone or is he actually an apology?
We've made attempts to contact him. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll put him as... Well, we put him in it as an apology. He's not technically, is he?
No.
Yeah.
Well, he's able to ring in now. So.
Okay. He's not technically actually an apology, so, yeah. He may or may not
arrive.
To
be fair... The council should put itself as an apology.
That's fickle.
Okay. He may or may not arrive. Yep, okay.
Maybe the issue should be noted.
Yeah, the issue should be noted. Thank you. Where are we at? No conflicts of interest then. No public forum. Confirming the minutes then, which have been circulated. Somebody care to do that? Councillor Hope seconded. I can second those. Yep. And we'll just put that now. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Actions there. I don't think these have changed. Biodiversity strategy. That bit was on hold. However, we have got an update there in the General Manager's report, which will provide us a good chance to discuss what is happening in that area. Minimum flow plan change update, that one was complete, so we can, when they're complete, we can then remove them, I suppose, from the actions, can't we? Yep. Oh, biodiversity action plan, same thing. Awaiting a couple of points. We haven't quite got a biodiversity officer yet, and we're trying to align biosecurity and biodiversity into a meaningful action plan, which is noted in the General Manager's report, so we can discuss that there. It is on hold. Another one complete. Water meter telemetry in progress, which is a report to Policy Committee around communications to encourage people to install telemetry. So we haven't done that yet.
No.
But it's on the radar.
It is. Some work was commenced and we reviewed that and sent it back for... some further detail.
Okay. Yep, so it is definitely happening. That's great, thank you. New approach for managing water and priority catchment. So establishing the technical advisory group and the community something or other group, CRG.
Community reference group.
Oh, that's right, yep. And the terms of reference. So, in progress, and can talk about that in the...
Yep,
report as well. Thank you. Okay, so that is that. On to the first report then, which is General Manager's report on progress. Thanks for the detailed report there, really helpful. Can be taken as read. I'll move through it in a minute, but if you want to touch on anything particularly... Mr. Newman?
No, just to say we've clearly got a separate discussion on the RPS, so we'll leave that till then.
Good point.
And where are we? We have also got some appendices there which I'll just draw your attention to. One is the discussion on FMU criteria analysis.
Yep.
And attachment two is just a very high level summary of the project plans for those three catchments. Okay, so I'll just draw your attention to those.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you very much for getting on to those while we're just on that, on the attachments. We did ask for analysis of how those FMUs were derived, and that'll be really helpful as we go into discussions with communities too. Just so that's really transparent, that's great that you've done that and provided that. And yeah, the other one's attachment too, which is also really important. And the part that I thought was particularly useful there was a breakdown timeline of what needs to be done when. Really good to see that down to that finer level of detail now, and trackable. So for you as well, which is fantastic.
That's right. You'll be able to hold us to account, Madam
Chair. Yeah, and just seeing for the community as well, just how we need to stick to dates to be able to meet that timeline at all. So, yeah, really good. Okay, then, let's move through the report. National Planning Standards, that was quite... We won't go into the detail of the RPS too much in this report. We'll have Alistair Logan here with us in a minute on the next paper. But just noting there that the National Planning Standards say that regional policy statements must be amended if they're not in line with the current planning standards within 3 years. So that's quite a task. So my question regarding that was, how are we going to know how in line? And this is probably a bit wee bit about the next paper as well, and I might be asking the wrong question. But, how will we know if we're in line, and how are we actually going to do that?
Yeah, so through you, Madam Chair, I might refer to Sylvie. So Sylvie's our National Planning Standards expert. Poor Sylvie. No one's yet an expert in it, but she's she's the best place we have.
Yeah, so sorry about that poll, Sylvie. It's hard to see people.
So, yeah, through you, Madam Chair, obviously we will need to do an in-depth assessment of the National Planning Standards against the RPS. But the National Planning Standards set mostly requirements around the structure, and that is probably the requirements which will be the most significant for the RPS. So at first glance, I think that where the main changes will go would be towards the objectives. Our objectives, so the structure required by the National Planning Standards are domain-based, air, land and fresh water, biodiversity, and our objectives tend to span across several domains, so that's probably what will need to be most reworked. But the devil will be in the details, so there is probably more work to do and a more in-depth assessment to be done. Yeah.
Thank you for highlighting that. That was what I understood, but good to have that clarified that they wanted it set out in those domains, like you say, and it would be very hard to unweave ours into those when it's woven right across a number of policy strands, so it could be potentially quite a big task. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, if there's no other comments on that one, yep, Councillor Scott.
Yeah, so if it becomes too hard or inappropriate, at what point do we go back to central government and say how much flexibility is there in this?
So through you, Madam Chair, they've been gazetted, it's law. What isn't clear is the implications of not complying. Yeah. So, I mean, that's it's like most of the legislation, there's no particular, clearly set out implications of not complying with the MPS or the National Planning Standards or any of those things, but it is law. I've not seen an RPS done in 3 years ever, there's always a chance. It's a really tight time frame from just to restructure things through a Schedule 1 process, 3 years is tight.
So does that mean that, are we getting a bit carried away in the way that we do our plans? You know, are we
as nimble as we need to be. It just seems to me every time we do a blooming plan, it's like walking from here to New Delhi. You know, like, at what point do we say, well, actually, it needs to be higher level than that, and it's going to be nimble, and we're going to relook at it in 3 years' time, and it's
going to be actionable. Sorry to interrupt. Have you finished, Councillor Scott? Yep.
Yeah.
Reflecting on how we did start off with our RPS, which was exactly with that in mind, being as nimble as we possibly could, and thinking that it would be as efficient as we possibly could, and even our time frames were quite short. In reality, it didn't turn out that way because it is a very important document. You have every submitter under the sun come along because it sets the framework for district, city councils as well as our own, so it's crucial, and people have a right to be involved, and yeah, they're big, and as we've heard said, they're seldomly done in 3 years. They are big, but hear what you're saying, and it would be a massive ask, but it's better that we've got awareness of it. Yeah, well, it's not great news. Yep.
I think the other thing that complicates it is that, you know, when the RMA was established, it was contemplated that there would be far more direction from central government through things like national policy statements. And so because that hasn't happened, and the likes of things like national environmental standards haven't really taken off either, we've had to compensate for that because we haven't had that national direction. What's starting to happen now, of course, is that some of those things are coming to fruition and we're getting some of those standards, but of course they don't take into account where each individual council is at with their planning cycle. So it makes it really challenging, and, you know, all I can say is we're not the only council in this boat. Everyone will be. You know, it's an unexpected thing. I think the other thing that we need to think about is it is hard to do the RPSs in a short amount of time, but there are some times perhaps where we need to be or need to think about options for, you know, do we mediate for 12 months or do we cut our losses and speed things up by just going to court? So, you know, there are some decisions you can make along the way that might get you an outcome more quickly. Doesn't mean it's any less fraught.
Through you, Madam Chair, and I don't know whether the planning standards will allow this, but what we were seeing through second generation RPSs is they were actually focused on the three or four resource management issues for the region rather than traversing. So all the first generation RPSs traversed everything. So, you know, Southland, we had a chapter on urban growth, which didn't happen. So, you know, it wasn't really an issue for Southland, and what we saw in second generations is they were targeted to four or five issues, which made them smaller and nimble and more responsive. I don't know whether the national planning standards allow us to do that, but there are different ways of, I guess, cutting the cloth to get quicker and faster.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, there's just some updates there with the 2GP. The proposed regional policy statement, which we'll discuss in more detail in a minute, biodiversity. That's really good to see that there's a lot going on there, thinking, and it hasn't at all slipped off the radar after we've done our strategy. We're trying to look at how the biosecurity, biodiversity work can be aligned and an action plan actually written as a result of that. We're actually close to confirming a provider for mapping Otago's biodiversity. That is fantastic news. I'm really actually pleased about that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. That's done.
Confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, being able to monitor biodiversity, mapping's the first step to that. You might want to go down to a finer scale with time, be able to prioritise. But having that mapped is going to be really helpful and also help be more efficient with our policy and planning as well. So that is very good. We're going to be soon able to appoint a coordinator, hopefully. That's fantastic news as well. We've got our funding underway as well for community type work. We're developing an actual action plan so that we've got actual tasks that can be measured and reported on as well. So really good news there. Anyone else have any questions, though, on biodiversity? No? Lindis, no real update there. It's just that the 30th of April, which was yesterday, was the closing submissions. So now we're just in a waiting game. Yep. Mac catchments, I like this.
Please note the name change.
Yeah, I'm liking this one
heeded
as well.
The messages. It may not be that creative, but it works.
Good messaging, I like it, yep.
Oh, I see.
So, do you want to take us through that a little bit? Is there anything new? We've already pointed towards the attachments there.
We want a quick Mac.
You don't want 10 years worth of planning. Sorry. just a couple of key things. One is we're due to have the first technical advisory group meeting next week. So that'll confirm the terms of reference, confirm the membership, and start to set out a work program there. So that's a pretty key meeting. And in particular, I'm pretty keen to see us get to a point where we know if there are any technical information gaps in the mix between all of the parties as quickly as we can. That's Manu Hierarchy specific.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a couple of those meetings from that group before we get the community reference group running, because the relationship between the two is that the information from the tag, sorry, pardon the jargon, but the tag flows up to the reference group, which then needs to look at scenarios, what that information means, and test scenarios, okay? So that's that'll be good. It'll be great to have that underway. The second thing I'd reference is just in the appendices or in the attachments is the project plan. So we've laid out some timeframes, pretty key, and we need to be making sure we hit those. And the third really key piece of work for Manu Hierarchia in particular is the hydrological model for the catchment. I think I referred to that in commentary I made in the last meeting. We had an update from NIWA on that yesterday, which was really useful. And it looks from what we were presented with, that we're going to end up with a pretty robust model, which will be able to build hydrological scenarios across the catchment, and it will be an exponential improvement in information for that catchment. So,
right.
So that's sort of good progress there, yep.
Okay, we've got Councillor Bell and Councillor Dacre.
Yeah, just through you, Madam Chair. Andrew, have you, can you bring us up to date about a chair? Have you?
I have got a name, and I guess it's probably not public yet. I just want to get around a few of the stakeholders first. But there is the background of the person, South Islander first, independent, doesn't live in the catchment. I'll just give you a few headlines here, which I think is important. Has a deep history in a combination of local government, central government, and planning exercises. So boards of inquiry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm reasonably confident that person will be, one, is happy to do the job, and then secondly, will be acceptable to the participants. But I just wonder, if you don't mind, rather than saying specifically who it is today, I would rather get around and talk to a couple of the other key stakeholders first. Is that all right?
Yep. Councillor Dacre.
Sounds very like David Parker to me.
Independent chair.
My question was a slightly similar one, yeah, about the technical advisory group. I didn't expect names, but could somebody, Andrew or Anita,
yep,
just give us a summary of the kind of skill range that of the people,
yep,
who are envisaged to be on that group? Not who are they, but what are they?
Yeah, so we're expecting in that group that there'll be technical people who've, when I say technical, people with scientific background, And that scientific background will be directly relevant to the core issues that are associated.
What kind of science are you talking?
Well, hydrologists, ecologists, et cetera, those sorts of skills, as well as we will need on occasion, but not all of the time, to introduce other people with a particular very specific technical role. It might be irrigation efficiency sorts of issues, but they'll come and go out. But the core membership, you'd see, for example, you'll see from the ORC science team, you'll see Pete Ravenscroft and Jason as core members of that group, and core members will also be hydrologists. So that's the sort of background, really. It's people who understand catchments, water, application of water to land, the environmental consequences, etc. Okay?
Perfect.
And look, I just probably should say one other thing. The art with this group will be to achieve two things. One is that no matter where the individual technical person comes from, if they've come out of fishing game or they've come out of the irrigator or they've been working for the irrigator group, that they're prepared to act as a technical expert in an independent and professional manner, and that the information generated in all of those processes is tabled. Because in reality, ORC doesn't hold it all. There are other participants who have some of that, and we need to get as much of that on the table as we can. So that'll be the art of it.
Thanks. Yep. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. I just, a question I had from the last meeting as well, it's not for the technical group, but for the community stakeholder group. I forgot the name of it, sorry. It's not the stakeholder group. The other one.
Reference group, thank you.
Was what's the sort of makeup of that group? And are they, if they're across community and representative organisations, how are they remunerated and how do we make sure that that is fair and everyone's feeling like their contributions are valued?
Yes, so there's a couple of questions on that one.
Yep.
Firstly, the representation is across it's really a blend, I guess you'd say, of stakeholders, the typical stakeholders you get in these processes. But also we're trying to enable or allow enough space for the community voice to be heard. Without getting into a lot of detail, I've talked to the mayor of Central Otago District about that to seek his advice. And I'll come back to you and give you an explicit view when I've got this thing bolted together. Coming to the remuneration, some of those parties will actually have paid people to turn up. It'll be part of their job anyway, right? It tends to, in my observation, it tends to be the participants in these exercises who are not remunerated for it tend to either come from the farming community or they come from a community background. At this stage, I don't envisage that we'd be paying the farming community reps to turn up. I think it's fundamentally in their interests, actually. They have a business and an economic gain through getting a proper water management process in place, but I'm conscious that we can't overuse their time, anybody's time, frankly. So where I sit today is that we're not proposing to remunerate necessarily other than the independent chair. I think that is a remunerative role. But if there are real constraints to people turning up that we think are fundamentally valuable to the process, then I guess we consider that.
And I think we need to be really open. Just a lot of these community groups put a huge amount of time and effort into a lot of processes, and this one being incredibly important to ensuring that we get a good representation of the best people to be there. And I know it isn't actually something that drives people, but in terms of how it's seen by the community, I think that's actually the reputational risk that we've got of being seen to not being able to be inclusive for that reason. I think it's quite high. So I think it would be good to hear some ideas around how we get
Take
around
that.
That would be great. Yep. Thank you.
I'll keep it.
Councillor Scott.
So the technical group, the community reference group, the terms of reference will all be brought to this table to be signed off?
Is that correct?
No, that's we had question. This discussion before, yeah. didn't we, and said just get on with it,
just
essentially.
With.
So that's the message that we've
yep.
given previously.
Okay, what about the yep. terms of reference?
Yeah, we'll attach those terms of reference for you, so obviously you'll have a copy of them. We've got drafts already. You've seen some of the thinking in the terms of reference already, and in reality, we just need to bolt those down with the various participants. So I've got a wee bit of work to do with that process, and we'll if you're okay, I think I'd prefer to just say once we've got them agreed between the parties, let's get on with it. But we'll ensure that you're well informed oh. about what they are.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think the key thing, you know, from my perspective, is just to reaffirm that they are advisory.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
advisors,
yeah.
So
it's very clear.
Let's not pump this up too much.
Yeah.
And yeah. and secondly,
yeah.
There needs to be some accountability. So, for example, what is the process if there's some dysfunctionality in one of the groups? What is the process?
Well, we'll have that. We've got that drafted into
the
terms of reference.
Yeah.
The process specifically for that. Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just continuing on with that as well as not just within the group in terms of a disagreement about how that works forward, but then, as I've asked before, how is that information presented back to this group, and how does that group then take it forward in terms of their ultimate decision? If it's advisory, I think we need to be upfront around what that actually looks like and what that means.
Yeah, and look, it's because it's advisory, is that there will be issues on which parties won't agree. It's inevitable. There'll be some core issues that I think at the end of this process would have solved some, would have closed the gap on others, and there may still be a residual set left that effectively will have to be resolved in a formal process, formal plan change process post-notification. And each of those parties is entirely, because this is advisory, it's entirely legitimate for them to pursue their own interests at that point. The key thing is there'll be some clarity over that.
Yep.
So you'll know. Yep.
Okay, Councillor Scott.
And in terms of the terms of reference, are you seeking to get, like, agreement from the whole community reference group? Are you, like, anything that comes out of it, does it need to be 100% agreed, or does it, do you just come up with the different divergent views? So how do you...
Well, a combination will identify where there's consensus and agreement, and
yeah.
will identify clearly where there's a disagreement and
okay.
The extent of that.
Good.
That's
yep.
good, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Small question is with paragraph 29 in May, which is very soon.
Yes,
we're
it is.
Going to commence the process in the Arrow and Cadrona
yes.
to inform setting freshwater objectives and limits. Just wanted to make sure that we're all aware what the bounds of that is. We still weren't too sure last time whether it was water quality and quantity, and just that we are clear heading into community consultation of what they're actually doing.
Okay, get Tom to specifically answer
yep.
that.
Thank you. You understand the question?
Yeah. To you, Madam Chair. So we are planning consultation in Wanaka for the Cadrona catchment and the aquifer, and in Arrow Town for Wakatipu Basin and Arrow catchment on, I think it's the 27th and the 28th of May, so it's at the end of the month. The purpose of the consultation, which is public, so it's everybody is invited, is to confirm the values. So that's the starting point, really, to go to that national objectives
yeah.
framework.
Yeah.
So we got to go back to the community and basically say, like, this is what we heard in terms of what is important to you as values, and confirm that with them. And the values will stretch the whole spectrum, quantity as well as quality. So they'll feed in to freshwater objectives for both. At what stage, like I said before, with quality we'll do our best to include it, but some aspects we cannot. For example, groundwater quality, we don't have a lot of scientific information around that. urban water quality as well. So, yeah, the information gathered from the consultation
yep.
will be brought forward into those processes.
Yep.
When exactly we'll deal with quality. Is, yeah.
That's yep, so it's driven by the values of the community,
yep.
essentially, isn't it? That's the answer.
Yep.
Okay, so you can't say, really, at this point, you have to wait and see what's
yep.
most important to communities. Yep. Okay, thank you. Great. Any other questions then on that one? No, we got some mediation been going on with QLDC's district plan, which is updating us there. And, yeah, looking at our FMUs, which are attached there, and following up on the request we had before to see them, I think. And then just the appendix, which is various responses we've made to other regulations and consents. Rightio, I think that's pretty much it. Does anyone have any other questions? No. Oh, sorry. Councillor Hope.
My apologies. Just wanted to ask you, I was listening, so forgive me if I got it wrong a wee bit. I'm asking a question. Now, are you still looking for a councillor to join that community group to be there? And are you looking for someone particularly in the Dunstan ward? Or what are you casting your net wide and varied? Or
No, it's a very good question. And the answer is yes, we are looking for a we are looking for a councillor rep, which you'll have to determine as a group. And the only thing I'd say is typically in these processes, in my experience, it's been one of the constituency councillors of the area.
Okay. So you'll bring that to us at some point and we will determine who it is. Yep, so not imagine. That's great. Thanks for clarifying that, Councillor Hope. Okay, well, we've got the recommendation to receive the report. Somebody care to move that? Councillor Hope, seconded Councillor Brown. All in favour? Against? Carried. Okay. The next paper is the implementation. Implications of the Environment Court's procedural decision on the proposed Otago RPS, Regional Policy Statement. There's quite a bit of detail there. Thank you. Welcome. We have legal counsel for ORC with us today, Alistair Logan, who you all know. Welcome along. We requested that Alistair join us previously, and great to have him here. There's a lot of detail in this report, and the recommendations are at the moment noting a few things. But I just wanted to say as well that if we want to have a full and frank discussion today on detail relating to RPS, we need to actually move into public excluded. If we want to just touch on the process that's been outlined before us and the recommendation type things of what we're doing as a council, that's fine. But otherwise, for matters of legal privilege, I suggest that going into public excluded is going to be most useful. So welcome to have a discussion on whether you think that's going to be helpful to do that straight away.
I think the more that we can discuss in public, the better, because I'm sure it's of interest to a lot of people, and if need be, I'm sure there will be issues that we need to take into public.
A lot of this is public. We've got a public paper here,
so
agree
with
that.
So if we discuss what's in the paper.
I understand, though, that some councillors do want to get into some detail. So Councillor Scott, then Councillor Deaker.
Look,
just discussing the process.
We went through
tonight.
That, you know, consent review situation, whether it should be public, and and I think the community feedback that we had was that it should be. Certainly, the editor of the ADT believed it should have been public. I actually took that as a bit of a learning. I can't imagine why we would go into a non-public here. And what I expect as a councillor is to have an understanding of the basic issues. And I'm sure that members of the community would expect the same.
Agree. Understanding the issue before us as a council is important.
And whether you call that, detail,
turn
I'll leave
to Mr. Logan in a minute as well, just to outline why there might be some case for going public excluded as well. But Councillor Deaker.
Well, you've just heralded maybe what I was going to say. I'd like to know why on earth we would go into committee to discuss this issue. I can't imagine what the circumstances would be that would require that. But I'm happy to hear from Alistair as to any case he might like to make to us for going into public excluded, but it'd have to be a hell of a good case. Otherwise, we're going to look like a pack of wimps again.
You might want to raise your seat. You look like you're begging us. You want some...
Okay. Just, if you can give us some advice as to the case for potentially public excluded.
Well, there are two elements to the potential discussion which might unfold. First is process, and that is how we got to where we are and where things are going to from here with the proposed RPS.
The microphone, sorry, Alistair, isn't switched on at the moment, I don't think.
The second matter is...
No, it's not picking him up at all. So, yep, there you go.
The second matter is that there are proceedings before the courts, both the Environment Court and the High Court, and it would be inappropriate to be discussing those in a public forum. Thirdly, to get into the substance of the matters that arise out of the court's decisions, the Environment Court's decisions, you're going to be asking for and getting some legal advice, and it's not appropriate that be in a public forum either.
Okay, well, let's proceed then in public and see how we go. We will discuss, not see how we go on important matters that Alistair's currently raised, because we do want to be mindful of good process and being most efficient and effective as a council as well. And in doing that, we need to maintain a good legal process, and sometimes legal privilege for discussions of that nature are really vital. So I think we have got a paper that's in public. Let's discuss that as much as possible and see if there's any questions that warrant going public excluded. Okay. Anybody like to start off? Would somebody like to outline perhaps the paper and where we've got to? Because it is quite complex, just the decision and, basically its outline of the paper.
So through you, Madam Chair, I guess one of the key things in the paper is paragraph 5, where it says the procedural decision is highly unusual. The advice we've had uses the word novel, and the first time they've seen a judge approve parts of a document and rule it to be unlawful. So the two things don't sit well together at all. So when we talk about process, we're a little bit constrained because no one else has been through this situation. But that also gives rise to the reason that Sarah approved the High Court appeal, and that there appears on the face of it that there may be issues of law. The other key thing, I think, in terms of how we got here is at no point throughout the hearing did the judge indicate that he believed the RPS may not prima facie give effect to the RMA. So the first time we knew about it was in the procedural decision issued. So that of itself has caused us some concerns, and he offered through that minute the opportunity to remedy or to propose changes, which we have done to some extent, except for we don't know where or why he thinks that overall it doesn't give effect to the RMA, so there's not much we can do to continue to do to try and remedy the gaps that we're not sure of. So I don't know if you want to add anything, Alistair.
All right, well, as you're probably all aware, that RPS has been before the Environment Court for quite some time now, and there were reasonably successful mediations on most of the appeal topics, and they resulted in a series of consent orders, draft consent orders being lodged with the court for approval. Something like 90% of them were endorsed and signed off. The outstanding matters related to two matters which weren't resolved at mediation, that's in relation to the port topic and a mining topic, in particular the mining interface with Indigenous biological diversity. So those two matters went to hearings in February last year. The decisions have now been issued on both those topics, and they have both been appealed to the High Court by persons who were unhappy with the outcome. The consent memorandum for Chapter 3 is the one that appears to have been problematic. Chapter 3 is one of the core chapters, I suppose, of the proposed RPS, because it deals with or contains the protective policies for natural resources, in particular landscapes, Indigenous biodiversity, water and the like, coastal environment and so on. That had sat with the court for some time, and there were one or two inquiries over a period of about 12 months from the court about a couple of issues which it identified with Chapter 3, and nothing which would have alerted the parties, it would seem, to potential problems that had been manifest in the procedural decision. The procedural decision approved Chapter 3, but with the rider that parties could apply to have that the provisions of Chapter 3 amended, if they wished, to reflect concerns which the court had raised and the reasons for its procedural decision. The discussion of Chapter 3 and the reasons given for the decision is quite short and focuses on a couple of provisions. The Regional Council's taken the opportunity of going back to the court on those two matters with suggested wording changes. A number of other parties have indicated an interest in the remainder have until the 8th of May to advise whether or not they wish to be heard. Only one party has expressly opposed the words that the Regional Council has put forward for consideration, and it suggested some alternative wording which isn't totally out of line with what the Regional Council proposed. So that is a process which is going to be in train and work its way through the Environment Court. However, what the procedural decision has said is that the proposed RPS as a whole doesn't, on the face of it, give effect to the purpose of the Act. The whole purpose of the RPS is to give effect to the purpose of the Act, and it's that ruling which is the subject of the appeal to the High Court. The appeal has been served on all the other parties which were involved in the RPS process, and there were something like 60 to 70 of them. 9 have given notice of interest in the High Court appeal. Most have indicated that they are simply taking a watching brief role and may not actively participate. There is a case management conference for next Monday to schedule that and make the necessary directions for that appeal to be heard sometime later this year. So that's kind of where things sit. Are there any questions arising out of that?
Okay, Councillor Scott.
Why doesn't the ORC and all the parties that have expressed an interest and the court sit in a room, shut the door, lock the door, identify the issues, get an agreement amongst all parties and sign it off?
That's a good question. What's the process and how?
Well, it might come to that, although we won't be sitting in the room with the court initially. We did sit in a room several rooms for several days to get Chapter 3 to a stage where it could be signed off by all parties
and the court.
from their competing perspectives. The court has signed it off, but said that it doesn't agree with it. That's the problem.
So involve the court in this process, Madam Chair.
Well, we have involved the court in this process by going back to the court and saying, well, we think that your concerns with the Chapter 3 are these, from the reasons which you have given. Here's our suggested solutions to the problems which the court has perceived with Chapter 3. Other parties who have an interest in Chapter 3 have a right to be heard on that, and it's now going through the process where they are putting up their hands to say whether they wish to participate further on it. Once everybody who has an interest is identified, then certainly we'll be going around the traps to see if we can sort it out with them. Whether we do or not, it has to go back to the court, and the court has said we'll have a hearing to sort it out.
So, in saying that, then we need to go to High Court regardless, or we try to sort it out at Environment Court level first, or I don't think that was clear.
So, the basic problem is we're not exactly sure why the judge said it, he believes it doesn't give effect to the Act. He just said he doesn't believe it does. Now, whether that's through a combination of the particular things he highlighted or more than that, we don't know. So we need to go to the High Court to have the decision tested to see whether it's lawful or not. That's the first question, is the decision lawful? Mm. If it's ruled to be lawful, then there's one particular avenue. If it's ruled that the decision is unlawful, then the process is different.
Madam Chair, isn't the first step to find out what the judge actually, the basis for that decision, to understand that?
Yes.
Otherwise,
they're
going to the High Court to challenge it, but nobody can actually understand, because you might have a different judge. So why did the last judge, what was the basis of that decision? Surely we need to understand
that.
Yeah,
so I think the process that's underway is designed to do that. So the submissions and the responses from other parties are designed to try and establish that issue. That's my summation of it. Turning to the issue of the appeal to the High Court, that was time-bound. In other words, ORC had to lodge that appeal within a time-bound process or it was out of the game.
Yeah.
So there's no choice about that, really. So you've got to, right now, today, both processes are relevant. It's a point in time issue, and it would be great if it could be solved, and we've got some clarity over all of this from the process that the second, you know, the process of submissions that could then resolve it. That would be the best outcome.
As a result of where we're at the moment, what is the status then of the partially operative RPS, which at the moment we've got the rolling, which we've just talked about, and whether or not it's contrary to the purpose of the Act or not? Yeah. So I understand that, but what is the status of that partially operative plan? Does it change or is it just sitting there?
Well, that's a question for legal advice, and I'm reluctant to give that in a public forum.
No, that's fine. Okay.
Want to go into publicly excluded session, I'll
ask other questions. Yep. Councillor Neil.
Well, Madam Chair, while this is all very interesting and we need to be acquainted with where we're at, it still seems to me that the process just has to carry on and take its due process, and we're certainly not going to solve the issue here. This is more about information for our council.
It is important information, and for our region, as we talked about before, and we all recognise that regional policy statement is crucial for Otago. So appreciate the chance to be able to discuss this and the amount of energy that our region, and actually much wider than that, and key industries in New Zealand even, put into submitting and being involved over many years actually to shape the RPS. So Everyone's interested in the outcome here. Any other questions then? Councillor Scott.
I would just appreciate just an outline of some of the fundamental issues without going into too much detail. So, for example, there was an issue of biodiversity offsetting. For example, there seems to the negotiations between the port and the council seem to have stalled. And, for example, just some of the fundamental basis of what YBRMA wasn't it fundamentally a landscape issue? So those three questions.
So through you, Chair, if I can discuss the port topic sits aside from all of this. There's a hearing set for the High Court early next month.
Why have we got this impasse?
So the issue with the port is there's a conflict between port activities and the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement, which has particular policies that require particular effects to be avoided. And the two things don't sit well together. The Environment Court tried to reconcile that conflict, and that's been appealed by the Environmental Defence Society, and that's the subject of the High Court hearing. So one of the... I don't know if you recall, but when the King Salmon decision came out, there was one dissenting judge who felt that taking the King Salmon approach may result in perverse outcomes not anticipated. The inability to reconcile the avoid with port activities is one of those particular outcomes that he was concerned about. There have been other cases similar to this in the Hawke's Bay in particular, where the Supreme Court King Salmon case stood. There's just a real difficulty between the NZCPS and port activities and national surf breaks, and so it's basically that area around Port Aramoana has outstanding natural landscape and ONF characteristics, and they're difficult to reconcile. Once you've got an avoid policy that says you must not...
Must not what?
Do things that affect the values... And port activities, dredging, etc., naturally impact on the things that contribute to those values. So it's really problematic to reconcile.
Dumping where they dump the sand.
Still subject to High Court
and
as well.
And it's subject, to the High Court appeal.
And not probably this paper, but that's okay. Yep.
Yeah. In terms of the other question, so...
biodiversity offsetting?
Yeah, so we've gone back to the court on that, and that's also been appealed by Oceana Gold to the High Court. So that's also subject to a slightly separate process. The things that the court said meant they didn't think it gave effect to the RMA, they didn't outline. So that's the difficulty we have. So they outlined some minor issues, gave us the opportunity to address those, which we've done, and then made the overall statement that they didn't believe it gave effect to the RMA. So we did ponder whether we tried to make more changes, but we weren't really sure where or what without clear direction. So there was very little merit in investing more resources in doing that. And as Andrew's pointed out, the appeals are time bound. So it was
so
just a matter
You've had quite a few questions.
No, it's the same question.
Yep.
I think these are reasonable questions. People want to know, you know, why is the process stalled? And so the biodiversity offsetting, Oceana Gold wants the ability to trade one for another. Is that how it works?
I'm not over the substantive detail of the appeal.
What's the roadblock? Nobody's told us what the roadblock is.
Well, I can help here, I think, if I may, Madam Chair. The Environment Court hearing on mining was, as I said before, about the interface of mining activities with indigenous biological diversity, and in particular where there is a loss of indigenous biological diversity, what policy provisions should be made in the regional policy statement for compensation and biodiversity. And the Oceana Gold are unhappy with where the Environment Court got to in its decision about the policies on those matters, and in particular think that the compensation for loss of indigenous biodiversity is in policy terms too restrictive. In particular, the court said that you can't compensate for certain losses of biodiversity. They're too important in the court's view.
That is interesting. So you can't, it's not a trade thing necessarily. Okay.
Councillor Dacre.
On the off chance we do move into public excluded, I think the public would want to know what the actual status is of this flash new RPS that the ORC has. Is it operative? Is it partially operative? Or is it inoperative? Now, I'm not going to ask Mr. Logan that because he has indicated he doesn't want to answer. But could Andrew or Anita answer that question? Where does it sit?
So, through you, Madam Chair, my interpretation is that we have a partially operative RPS and an partially operative, the existing one, I don't know what it's called, the operative RPS and a partially operative RPS. Their status remains as they were. It's the lawfulness of them that's been questioned rather than the status of them. So there's a distinction. The problem is, as case law has said, if you have an RPS that is, or a plan that's old or out of date or doesn't give particular effect to higher order instruments, you can pass it and go up to part two of the RMA. So that's the situation we've got. King Salmon has meant that applicants and plans don't necessarily need to give effect to the RPS while we have a judicial authority that has said they believe it's unlawful. So it's put a cloud over it, notwithstanding that it is still operative and partially operative.
That's helpful, thank you.
Okay. Well, I think that answered the question that I asked before as well. So far I haven't heard anything that needs to go into public excluded. So are there any other questions then? No. We've got the recommendations that, you can see them there. There's three of them.
I'll move the recommendations.
Thank you. Seconder?
Yep.
Councillor Hope, all in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Can I just note that paper from James Adams was particularly good? And he should be given that feedback. He did a very thorough job of that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. We can now close the meeting.
Oh, that's good.